Welcome to Scenes, conversations in culture with the people who know it best. We chat with guests across music, art, fashion, film, sport and technology in a bid to understand the scenes we love that little bit better. I'm your host Lenny, and in this episode I am joined by political cartoonist and puppet animator Zoom Rockman. I was lucky enough to be invited to see behind the curtain at Zoom's studio, where he shared his love of comic book culture, political satire, puppet animation, and blues music. I hope you enjoy the chat as much as I did. Can you tell me the first thing you remember falling in love with and the impact it's had on you later in life?
My immediate answer to this question is Chili Peppers. I've always loved spicy food. I remember when I was a kid, we went to like a garden center and I just picked a chili pepper off from one of the plants and ate it. And ever since I've been obsessed with spicy food. But I guess that doesn't really link to like the kind of work I do and stuff.
I think that's absolutely fine. We've had some interesting answers so far. So I'm more than happy to crack
in fact, I actually, in primary school, we had to do a essay about something that we loved. And I did a whole essay on chili peppers, and I did it all in comic form, and it had like sections on how I eat one, the history of them, how spiciness is like measured. It's in Scovilles. It's actually like how much sugar it takes to get rid of the taste. But the second thing that I fell in love with was comics.
Yeah,
of course.
Which makes sense.
Which makes more sense. When I was eight, me and my family, we went to a car boot festival. I found a box of old Beano comics, and I'd actually like never read a comic before, so I had this like I used to write short stories.
Was this prior to finding the comics?
Prior to finding the comics, I used to write short stories, you know, about me and my brother or anything like over the top. But I'd also do a lot of drawing and doodling in class and things. I got very bored in school. But when I saw the Beano for the first time, I didn't know that narrative and drawing could like come together in this way. And so I bought the box full of Beano, all from the 1980s and stuff. So it was all like yellowed paper and stuff. And I was reading them in my bed and reading them. And then started drawing my own, like drawing the characters and things, and then coming up with my own characters. So when I published my first comic, it was sort of a more extreme version of the Beano.
Okay, and when you say published?
You know, self-published.
Self-published, yeah.
Found a printers and started selling them at school in the playground.
Oh, wow.
But also my local newsagent, which is just down there.
Oh, so we're still here.
We're still in the same house.
Amazing.
Yeah, so went down, just asked if I could sell it, and they were okay with that. And then once it was selling there, I could expand the business, you know.
So not only an artist and comic strip maker, but an entrepreneur as well.
Well, my parents never gave me pocket money growing up, so I had to, you know, make money somehow.
Going back to what you said about discovering comics for the first time at the age of eight, and you said that before that you were writing, but you weren't drawing.
Yeah.
Did the drawing come naturally to you, or was it something that you worked on because you discovered your love of comics?
No, I'd been drawing ever since I could pick up a pen. Like, my grandparents have, like, big drawings that I've done in the past when I was really young, like four and three. Up on their walls and things, and I've always been into that sort of thing. And I think maybe a lot of it came from being bored in class.
So from school boredom to a Beano contributor, what led to you becoming their youngest ever artist?
Well, you know, I was doing my comic, and it was coming out in the beginning every 6 months, because the process was a lot shorter back then. I was just scribbling with a biro on a piece of paper. But every time I did an interview, I'd mention the Beano. So I was slowly getting on their radar, I think.
I love that. Shout out to Beano every time.
Yeah, always shout out to Beano, because it's what inspired me in the first place. And then I started going to the Cartoon Museum, which is sort of like the center of the whole comic scene. So I was going there. I was doing workshops, comic workshops, with a guy called Steve Marchant, who was doing workshops for kids. And the BBC was doing a program on Dennis the Menace's like anniversary, and they were doing like interviews at the Cartoon Museum, and because I was involved with the Cartoon Museum, they mentioned me. I was interviewed about my comic, and that went off on BBC News. And so the guy who interviewed me, he took my comic, and he went to, the next person he interviewed was Mike Sterling, who's the editor of the Beano, and he gave my comic to him. And a few days later, I got an email saying, would you like a job at the Beano?
And this is at age 12?
Age 12.
Amazing.
And I did a monthly mini strip featuring one of my characters from my comic called Skanky Pigeon. And that ran for 4 years. And it was a lot of fun doing it. It was sort of, it was different for me because I was used to doing like these whole pages of comics. And now I had to condense it down to like just 3 frames. But yeah, it was a learning curve, but I was able to do it and it was a lot of fun. And it was really like just amazing sort of coming full circle back to the Beano, which had inspired me in the first place.
While we're on the subject of adaption, how has the world of comics evolved in the digital age?
I mean, obviously in the past it was all like print media and stuff. Yeah. And that's still thriving. I mean, like, because I do work for Private Eye. And they're doing really well. even though like print is like becoming less and less, people still like Private Eye. I think it was actually going up in sales. I mean, all the politics and things that
so
are going
so they've
on.
They've got a lot to comment on, haven't they?
The yeah, moment. I have been noticing like comics have been more going in the direction of social media relatable shit. You know, like when you're just like consuming social media, you're not really thinking about it. It's just stuff that needs to be funny enough for you to lift your finger to like it.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, I see what you mean, yeah.
But there was a point where it seemed like I had to start doing relatable comics on Instagram or whatever, but that's not what I had any passion to do at all. So I'm glad I've been able to sort of like find my own content to produce that I'm a bit more interested in.
So what is the content that you're happiest creating?
So well, it's a sort of a mix. I'm going like down 2 different routes at once, really. I've got my political cartoons that I do for Private Eye magazine.
Yeah.
I've been doing that since I was 16. I started getting stuff rejected for the Beano because it was too old for their audience. Because I was always like, my humour has always been like the same like age as I've been, you know. And so I was thinking of like where I could move towards, and Private Eye just seemed like the next logical option because I'd been interested in like political humor and stuff. I'd been watching Have I Got News For You for a long time, and I knew that Ian Hislop was involved with he was the editor of Private Eye. And yeah, my kind of humor. I'm also a big fan of Peter Cook, who used to edit and work at Private Eye. So I just wanted to work there and do cartoons for them. So I was still doing my comic, and the comic that I had out at the time was based on a Peter Cook and Dudley Moore sketch called What's the Worst Bloody Thing That Could Happen to You? This comic that I did, I sent to Ian Hislop with a covering letter saying, you know, I'm a big fan of Private Eye and Peter Cook, and I'd love to know how to submit cartoons. And he sent me a really nice letter back telling me where to send to. And the first cartoon I got in was actually of, it was about Grenfell Tower, because that had just happened.
Yeah.
And it was of Big Ben in like the cladding. And the title was like Things That Will Never Happen. And I've been working for them ever since. They actually brought out a book recently, which was Philip Hammond. He's like a medical doctor, and he was writing this article about the coronavirus and sort of like getting people up to date. So it would be every week he'd have his article, and it was like people going to it for like the information, you know, not like from Boris or anything, you know, like the actual what's going on. But they've collected all those articles together now and published it. And it's actually got one of my cartoons on right on the front.
So is that your first experience of being published in a book rather than a comic strip?
It's not actually.
Oh, it's not. You know what? I was expecting you that you were going to say that.
So I've been working with, you know, LBC.
Yeah.
One of the presenters, Ian Dale. He edited this book together called The Prime Ministers, and basically every chapter is about a different prime minister, like a biography about them, written by like different journalists and, you know, news presenters and things.
Yeah.
And so I drew portraits for every single prime minister.
While we're on the subject of politics, do you try or do you have to remain neutral with your views in order to be satirical towards all parties and different opinions?
I'm very aware that like people have their different worldviews and things. Every side thinks that the other side is evil and stupid. So I don't want to be viewed as evil and stupid by anyone. So I usually try to present things as they are, maybe a slightly silly way to it. And then what's interesting is how people interpret the cartoon, because it reveals like where they're coming from, like their own framing. If you have like an ideology, that means you're sort of like, what's it called when a horse has like the
blinkers on?
The blinkers on. You're going to be blind to like things that are going on. So I'd rather just like focus on the truth.
Yeah.
On the reality is of pointing out issues and things, and then letting people interpret it how they want to. And the other thing is, like, I am really interested in politics and stuff, and I do, like, read a lot about that kind of thing. But I found, like, the more that I learn about it, the less confident I am about having a strong opinion about things, because I realise, like, how little I know. And, of course, I'm, like, I'm still young, I'm 21, and I feel like I've got catching up to do. Because all the adults, like, they've lived through, like, political history.
Yeah.
And they know it well. And I feel like I have catching up to do. You know, maybe at some point I'll be really, like, angry and passionate about something. But not yet. I've got to do my work first.
Well, I look forward to seeing what passions your experiences lead you to and the work that comes out of it. As I came in today, you showed me some of your puppets, and I'd love to know how your evolution from comics to puppeteering came about.
I'd always been like interested in animation, you know, being able to make my drawings move. But every time I did like a stop frame animation, I'd be really passionate about it, and then after an hour I'd get so bored. And I wouldn't be able, I'd only have done like 3 seconds by then. And so I hate drawing the same thing over and over again. Like, I want to do my drawing, get it out, and then do something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, animation wasn't quite working for me. But then I realized, you know, I can draw something, use a light box, and then separate out the parts and make a puppet. And so I was doing stop frame with that, you know, pushing it along each frame. Initially, it was of like people in the news, because this was over lockdown I did this. So it was Boris Johnson, Matt Hancock,
yeah,
and Donald Trump doing like puppet animations. And then I got sort of sick with politics over lockdown. So I did sort of more musical.
Okay.
Animations, like I was getting really into blues music. You can see I've got a Sunhouse vinyl up over there. So I did a Sunhouse animation, actually, like puppet animation. He was singing Def Leppard blues. And then the next one I did was of a blues singer called Sam Chapman. And I'd worked out like a, for the puppet itself, like the lips, because with the mouths, I was like sticking on new mouths for every letter of the word. I realized that I could just like make the lips in like 6 parts and actually move it. And I was stop frame animating it. And then I realized, what the hell am I doing? I could just push it in real time. And so that's when animation like turned into puppetry for me. But it's sort of like, I feel like I'm still animating. It's just taking out like the hours of pushing it bit by bit.
Yeah.
Like speeding up the process of animation. So that's what I've been really into, and it's sort of like a new style of animation.
Yeah.
Anyway, because there are things called like real-time techniques that people do in animation, but they're like digital. So I thought, why can't I do that in real life and it still be called animation, you know? after the Sam Chapman one, I made one of the blues singer Robert Johnson. He has this whole legend about him like selling his soul to the devil, but he was never filmed like performing in his lifetime.
Okay.
He's part of the 27 Club, you know, he died age 27, so no one ever got the chance to film him. But there's like three photos of him that exist, and a lot of fake photos of him that exist.
When you say fake?
Fake, well, they've like seen other people who slightly look like him and like posted the photo. But there's only three like confirmed photos of him. And I took one of these press photos of him. And I used that as a reference, and I made a puppet, and I was able to, you know, move all the limbs and things and sort of bring him back from the dead in a way.
Yeah.
So he could, like, perform for the first time in,
that's
like,
amazing.
Over 100 years or whatever it is.
And what's the reaction been like to the blue stuff that you've been
putting? Oh, people have been really enjoying it, and I think they like seeing how it works, like, mechanically as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just the film itself. I need to sort of zoom out and show what I'm doing around it as well.
Oh, okay.
But I've really liked how I can like sort of find a community like the blues scene on Insta, and then they can give me feedback on like, remember to make Robert Johnson's fingers really long because that's how he was able to like reach all these notes and things.
Okay.
Or he holds like, he plays like this. These are the, you know, confirming what the actual photos of him are.
Yeah.
That's what, things like that. Yeah, so it's been good like doing that, but I have like quite a wide range of like music that I listen to, so it's sort of funny when I do blues, if I do like blues animations and people like follow me because of that, and then I do some Irish folk or something and sort of like a clash of genres. Yeah. And then like go into like reggae or ska. I did like a Max Romeo animation at one point.
Well, I suppose, you know, you bring the community in via the music, and then you hope that they stick around for the animation and the puppetry and their enjoyment in that.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, I think I sort of do my work for myself, really. Like, I'm very hardworking if it's something I actually care about. But if it's, like, an essay or something, like, I will procrastinate endlessly.
I'm the king of procrastination, so you're in very good company at the moment. You've evolved your craft, and I wanted to ask what you thought the future of comics looks like.
I don't think I can really speak for the community. I just speak for what I'm interested in and where I'm heading. You know, like with my puppet animations and stuff, I want to head more towards like music videos and things like that. I can't say anything about like the bigger picture of where comics are going, because I only know from what I'm doing.
To change the question, where would you like to see them go?
We have a good like scene going, and I wouldn't want, you know, I could say like, oh, maybe a move more like digital or something, but I think there's people want to own things. People want to have like physical things. I think over lockdown a lot of people got sick of digital, you know. People want to own like comics and self-published things, and yeah, I mean, that's why I did the puppet stuff, because like I was sick of everything being online, all my uni online, out speaking to my grandparents online. I really like that sort of physical, you know, like cutting and sticking and chopping things up and working with my hands.
Yeah,
so I hope there is like a space for like the physical. And that grows. I mean, the whole like vinyl thing like is another part of, I don't know, the zeitgeist with that, you know, people wanting to own physical things and hear the real sound coming off it.
I'm not, you know, massively into the digital sphere. Certainly with books anyway, I much prefer reading
a
proper book rather than a Kindle. I could never get my head around having or owning a Kindle.
Well, I also think if you're reading, because I like to like look back through history and stuff and read like, find like really old books and stuff. And if I'm reading an old book, I don't want to read it on an iPad. I want to get like the dusty old edition of it.
Yeah, exactly. It takes away from part of the experience, doesn't it?
Me and my brother, we've got like, not a library, but we've got like a bookshelf, and we collect like really old old books and things. You know, I did Skanky Pigeon for the Beano, yeah. So I bought like a old Victorian book on like pigeon fancying, whatever. not that you fancy pigeons, but that it's like judging them for like competitions and things. And they've got like all these like old like book plate illustrations and things.
I think your approach to your craft's really inspiring, and this craving for the physical experience with this attitude of how can I make this journey more interesting for myself?
Yeah, I think I've sort of found a way to marry the two together and like do something that I love to do. The great thing about like doing the puppetry instead of animation is that at any point you can play with the puppet that you've made, you know, and I can get Robert Johnson to sing any song I want, you know, just by moving his mouth. So there's a lot of playing involved with it. I did get a bit creeped out at some points, you know, especially like with the whole him selling his soul to the devil, and then I've got this like living thing in my hands.
Like a voodoo doll.
Yeah. There's definitely. I was sort of doing it as a college project at the same time. And it did go down the route of like I'm being haunted, you know, by this thing that I've made, sort of like an evil Pinocchio. I realised that the eyes follow you around the room, because there's a hole for like where the eye socket is, and then below it is where the eyeballs were, and because there was that gap, it meant from perspective, it was moving and following me around the room. No, I just noticed that at one point, and that freaked me out as well. Yeah,
turn it around or put it in a box.
Yeah.
So to finish things off, like we always do on this podcast,
yep.
Can you recommend something that we should listen to, read, or watch that has helped you gain an insight into a culture unfamiliar to your own?
Well, something that really fascinates me from a different culture is Chinese shadow puppetry. It's been traced back to the Yellow River region in 100 BC. And the people who were around at the time, they were making puppets using donkey, sheep, and cow leather pieces, adding colour, joining them together, and adding sticks to manipulate the movement behind a backlit cloth. And they'd perform folktales and current affairs shows around the country. And that's sort of mind-boggling, because it's like spitting image, but in 100 BC. I'd love to be able to modernise their processes using my paper techniques. And I'm hoping to go to China at some point and research this further.
A huge shout out to Zoom for letting us into his world, and I highly recommend you go and check out some of his incredible work. As always, I'll leave some links in the description to the recommendations Zoom made. Until next time.